You're out there floating on your own, hoping the streets will somehow occupy your mind. You fight the hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. Tell me,
do you really think that
the government cares about you?
No, they don't.
Get to people. Who you gonna turn to next?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen to me, I'm trying to tell y'all, yeah.
Get to people.
Self-respect.
Stop it now. Show some love for yourself, people. Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need. You really want inside can only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride leaves you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness you can never get used to.
Get to people. What are you trying to prove?
Come on, tell me, y'all.
Do you really think that
the world gives a damn about you?
Hell no, it don't.
Get to people.
Who you gonna turn to?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen, people. You better take a look at yourself, yeah.
Talking to my people,
but you just don't see
what you're living
at. Living like you're living,
living like you're living.
Caught up in the make-believe,
lost in your
dreams.
Get to people.
Stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it, y'all.
People.
Talking to my people, yeah.
Take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need when what you really want inside can only come from
with your life.
Running like a red disease.
Running like a red disease.
Get to people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah. Get to people.
Get to people. Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in the medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history has a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sante.
Excuse me. Can somebody please tell me why we got to celebrate Black History Month? I want to know why they gave us just a month, the shortest month.
I am here to represent the struggle that has gone on for 300 or more years.
We're not Americans. We are people who formerly were Africans who were kidnapped and brought to America.
And I knew that I could never again raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed and the ghetto without having first spoken clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government.
It's a common misconception that Europeans gave us Black History Month. In actuality, it spawned from Dr. Carter G. Woodson. He was a visionary who believed history should be used as a source of motivation and a weapon against misinformation and the intellectual warfare against Black people in the diaspora. So he began developing the concept of Black History Week. Yes, that's where it started. And this concept came to life in February of 1926 and later turned into Black History Month. He chose the month of February because this is the month Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln was born. He acknowledged Lincoln for signing the Emancipation Proclamation, and naturally he believed Frederick Douglass was an example of determination for all Black people. Woodson was a dedicated scholar, a passionate writer whose pen stayed in constant motion, who was constantly teaching and documenting, all for the advancement of Black people. Dr. Woodson was the founder and publisher of the Journal of Negro History. He was a regular columnist for Marcus Garvey's weekly journal, Negro World. In 1915, he founded the Association for the Study of African American Life and History. In 1920, he founded the oldest operating African American book publishing company, Associated Publishers. And he wrote over 20 books. And his most famous work was The Miseducation of the Negro, which was written in 1933. Many Black scholars find this prolific book even more relevant in today's day and time. But just as important as who fought for Black history is why.
First, you have to realize that up until 1959, Africa was dominated by the colonial powers, and by the colonial powers of Europe having complete control over Africa, they projected the image of Africa negatively. They projected Africa always in a negative light. Jungles, savages, cannibals, nothing civilized. And when, and naturally, it was so negative until you, it was negative to you and me. And you and I began to hate it. We didn't want anybody to tell us anything about Africa, much less call us an African. And in hating Africa and hating the African, we ended up even hating ourselves without even realizing it. Because you can't hate the roots of a tree and not hate the tree. You can't hate your origin and not end up hating yourself.
May I say something to you to give you a true knowledge of yourself and life so that the same glory and success attained by other men who understand themselves may be yours? Man in the full knowledge of himself is a superb and supreme creature of creation. When man becomes possessor of the knowledge of himself, he becomes master of his environment, the captain of his own ship, the director of his own destiny, the accomplisher of his own ends.
You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Do you realize that one of the great aims of all those who would enslave or who are enslaving is to keep the truth away from them? This is a tactic, a well-known tactic. Keep the truth out. Don't let the people know.
Much like these other great leaders, Dr. Woodson, having obtained his PhD from Harvard and been a professor at Howard University, saw firsthand how African-American contributions were constantly overlooked, ignored, and suppressed by the writers of the textbooks and the teachers. And with Woodson coming from the world of academia, he was also very critical of how the institution of higher learning dealt with black people. He believed they were pushing out educated servants that were thoroughly indoctrinated, not people who would return to their community and knew how to create their own. But instead, producing individuals that would depend on the same people that subjugated them. Dr. Woodson spent his life motivating black people with their history. His last work was the Encyclopedia Africana. It would have been a 6-volume work, but on April 3rd, 1950, at the age of 74, Dr. Woodson was laid to rest before it could be finished. Black History Month was never intended for us to restrict the learning of our history to February only. It was simply a way to collectively wake up our consciousness from what we were not being taught. Dr. Woodson understood that we cannot rely on any institution or any other race to teach us about us, which is why he devoted his life to writing our history for you. And for that reason, this great ancestor, we honor. Ashe? Ashe. The first person to comment below with the Carter G. Woodson quote, "I will personally mail you my copy of The Miseducation of the Negro," signed by the great Griot.
This call is being recorded.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotel family, it is the second day of February. It's Groundhog's Day, and Punxsutawney Phil saw a shadow, so there's 6 more weeks of winter. Oh, no, forget that. I'm sorry. It's the second day of African and American African History Month. That's what's important. Black History Month. I mean, I don't care about the damn groundhog. The weather is going to be what it is, because that's what the weather is. It's gonna, you know, I ain't worried about the weather. But although it is very cold up north, it's not, and it ain't doing really good here in Atlanta. In fact, it's only like about, what is it, like 40-something degrees. So, but I know up north it's in the, it's below zero in some cases, so it's really serious. So make sure you stay warm. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, need to do, have to do, must do, should do, better do. And I hope the weather is accommodating for you to do those things. And hope you have a great weekend to do them. That you enjoy your time off, if you do have time off, and you engage in something positive. Today, we're going to talk about Dr. Carter G. Woodson. First, let me give you our lineup and promote some of the other programs that we have here on Time for an Awakening. Of course, you can always call and be a part of the conversation, and you can give us your African perspective at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. And this is African Perspective. Excuse me. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific Time, or any other time. If you can't catch us live, you can go online to Black Talk Radio Network and check out previously recorded programs. On Mondays, it is Let's Buy Black 365. Buy Black 365 at 8 p.m. Eastern. On Wednesdays, from 8 to 10, it is Revive with Sister POC. On Thursday, last night, great program we had last night with Us Lifting Us, me and Baba Akima. Excuse me, no, not Baba Akima, Baba Kimbizi and Sister Nana. And Sister Nana out of Denver and Baba Akima and Baba Kimbizi right here in the Atlanta area. And we talked about the importance of developing a program like ULU and how people can join. But just as well, we're about ready to open up our internet cafe. Cafe ULU will be opening up within the next couple of weeks. Very excited about that. It just goes to show that we can do this. We can trust one another, believe in one another, support one another, and pull our resources together to do for ourselves. A shining example. Very excited about the upcoming projects that we're going to engage ourselves in with Us Lifting Us. ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people. Friday. Today's Friday. Well, if today is Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern time, it's time for an awakening. That's right, time for an awakening with my good friend and brother, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard this evening. Check them out. Of course, you'll have a dynamic program and good guests lined up for you. On Saturday, tomorrow, it's Troy Wilmore, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Saturday evening, early evening, it's Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., no, it's not Brother Oshi. It's not African Perspectives. It's Revive with Sister POC on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., it's time for an awakening. Once again, it's time for an awakening. So those outstanding programs that we have here, and we have callers already. So I'm going to take this call. 414, go ahead, caller.
Well, good morning, Brother Oshi.
Good morning. Hey, it's Brother Kwaku. Hey, I'm doing fine, Brother Kwaku. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I just enjoyed the trip. I just wanted to call in and just want to hear your voice. And so I'm just going to listen to the program because it's going to, with the background noise I got.
Okay.
It's going to come across on the air, and I don't want to do that.
Okay, well, I appreciate that, dear brother. Continue to listen, and we'll talk. Thank you.
Okay, man, peace.
Peace. And we have another caller. 267. 267.
Hey, good morning, Brother Oshi. Brother Ralph, how you doing?
Hey, Brother Ralph, I'm doing fine. How you doing this day, dear brother?
I can't complain to you, Brother Oshi. I just wanted to call in. First of all, I'm going to continue to listen because, you know, Carter G. Woodson, I think it should be mandatory in all schools for us to read The Miseducation of the Negro because, man, a lot of us are miseducated. And the older I get, the more and more I see it each and every day.
Oh, no doubt.
So, yeah. So, and then second, Brother Oshi, I just want to drop this on you, then I'm going to let you go so you can get into your dialogue. You know, I was glad that you arrived to that conclusion about white supremacy. One of my coworkers had a nerd ask me about 2 days ago. Said, "Yeah, I'm looking at YouTube and all I see is a lot of black people talking about why they calling, you know, white people white supremacists." I said, "Well, I can't speak for them, but I don't call y'all that. I don't see nothing supreme about you." You know what I mean? I said, you didn't create this planet. So I don't see nothing supreme about you. So no, I do not use that term. Now, as far as them, I don't know. You will probably have to ask somebody that uses that term, but I do not use it.
And see, that's the thing
that I've been, why I never used that term, Brother Oshi. It does our youth a disservice when they hear grown adults white supremacists and white, it's like they don't have a chance. Because I think some of that stuff that Neely Fuller spews, I think it's absolute poison. I mean, it's like the big bad boogeyman is out there and we got to beware. Forget that. Now, I do like the term you use, extremists.
Yeah,
they're extreme on a lot of their thought process.
Exactly.
But Supreme, cut me a break, brother. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cut me a break. You can see it in athletics. You can see if we were given the right opportunities. We could do it in college. We could do it anywhere if we're given the right opportunities.
Sure. You're most correct. In fact, it's been said that whatever realm of occupation or society that we apply ourselves to, we do well. We do,
right.
In fact, better than anybody. It's the fact that the reason why we are so good in entertainment and athletics and so forth is because this society feels it's comfortable in those settings. But if we would apply ourselves into education, into sciences and computers, and you can see that. Every now and then they highlight a brother or sister who has done remarkable work. Some who have gone on and went to college at a very young age. I saw one the other day, graduating at 12 years old, a sister. Don't remember what the college
right.
it was. But I'm saying is that you are most correct, Brother Ralph. In fact, when they use the word white supremacist, how they use it as if that some backwoods, ignorant folks are spewing some rhetoric about being supreme. Because really, the Caucasian society's attitude and mindset is that they are supreme. They are the so-called white supremacists, not some, you know, tiki torch, khaki wearing cats marching down the damn street talking about you not replace us. No. The people who set this up, the people who took Australia, the people who took the imperialists, the British, the Germans, the French, all of them believe in their superiority and their manifest destiny, their right to rule and dominate others. So this is not just a little fringe group. No, this is the general mindset of Caucasians.
That's in my opinion, is arrogant. And extreme.
Exactly.
So, you know,
yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I've been trying to get that out. And now, you know, I know there's a lot of people that follow Dr. Welsing and Neely Fuller. No disrespect to my two elders, but I have always questioned that. And, you know, just like I've always questioned the Democratic Party, like I've always questioned a lot of things, it got me in a lot of trouble. With some of the so-called conscious folks.
Yeah.
But then slowly but surely, they're starting to grasp some of the things that I've saw in my 20s. So,
right.
You know, Brother Oshie, I just had to call in just to, you know, congratulate you for coming, you know, no longer feeding into that word. It's arrogance and it's extremism. The extremism, I can buy into that because their thought process is very extreme.
Exactly.
It's very arrogant. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And which in turn is very evil. So,
no doubt.
And, you know, and another, I'm going to leave you with this. I no longer, and I've always said this, I never call people out of their names. I don't want it being done to my people, and I sure don't do it to other people. I don't call us the N-word, and I don't call them the C-word. Because I'm, like I said, Brother Oshie, some people can do it, but I've graduated out of kindergarten a long time ago. You know what I mean?
So
these are my views. And when you do stoop to their level and start calling them out their names, that way, that's when they come at you and attack you because
right.
they got you. They can kick you out of office. They can kick you off your jobs. They can do everything. But as long as you give them the truth, they can't do nothing.
Nothing. That's right.
That's you know
right.
what I mean? They can't do nothing but just walk away from you. So, you know, I just had to, like, share that with you this
appreciate
morning, brother.
It, brother.
Keep up the good work, man.
Right
I appreciate your program, and I'll continue listening.
Thanks, Brother Ralph. You have a blessed and wonderful weekend, man.
You too, brother.
All right, peace. Appreciate my good brother. In fact, I'm on this program because of him. He's the one that kind of led me into it, so I appreciate Brother Ralph. Tremendously. Carter Godwin Woodson. He was born in December 19th, 1875 in New Canton, Virginia. He died April 3rd, 1950, at the age of 74 in Washington, D.C., at the YMCA where he was staying. He got his bachelor's from Brea College, and then his master's from the University of Chicago, and then his PhD at Harvard University. He was the second American African to get a doctorate degree from Harvard. William Edward Burghardt Du Bois was the first. But what Carter G. Woodson did not see in all of his studies was the history and accomplishments and achievements of African people. And so Carter G. Woodson's life mission was to reclaim, recapture, and restore the history of our people. Carter G. Woodson, for me, is one of the people I most admire and respect in our history. You know I love Dr. John Henry Clark. Love him. Love them all of them. But Carter G. Woodson and Dr. Clark and others are special. I love the historians. I love those men and women who, without foundation money or grant money, who just understood the importance of history, of infusing our people with the knowledge of self. I love them. I respect them highly. Carter G. Woodson was working in the coal fields of West Virginia to support his family. He never married, so it was to support his siblings and other family members. He never had children. Found out about a high school for us, Douglas High School, for us in Virginia. And he went to high school. He was 20 years old. He finished high school in 2 years. And in fact, he even taught at that high school for a minute before he went to Brea College to get his bachelor's and then to University of Chicago, where he stayed at the Wabash Avenue YMCA. Reason why I mention that is because my good friend, Dr. Conrad Worrell, his father worked at that YMCA. And Dr. Frances Cress Welsing and her sister would go down there. In fact, Dr. Conrad Worrell knew them well, the Cress girls. And Carter G. Woodson, after seeing that information had been dismissed or ignored, or, you know, his life work was to reclaim and recapture and restore our history. He started with the writing books. One of his first books was The Education of the Negro prior to 1861. His other books followed: A Century of Negro Migration in 1918, The History of the Negro Church in 1927. His work, The Negro in Our History, has been in reprint in numerous editions since his death in 1950. In 1916, Woodson began the publication of the scholarly work, The Journal of Negro History. It has never missed an issue despite the Great Depression, loss of support from foundations and individuals, and two world wars. And in 2002, it was renamed The Journal of American African History and continues to be published by the organization that he started, which was the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History, which has changed to the Association for the Study of American African Life and History. Woodson stayed at the Wabash YMCA during his visits to Chicago. He experienced at the Y and in surrounding Bronzeville neighborhood inspired him to create the Association for the Study of Life and History. The Association for the Study of Negro Life and History, now the Association for the African American Life and History, which ran conferences and so forth. And any inspiration, he was an inspiration. In 1933, he wrote The Miseducation of the Negro. I think every home, every American African home, should have a copy of that book so we could clearly understand that it has been a deliberate attempt to miseducate us by this society that continues to this day. There is a saying in Islam, the sayings of Prophet Muhammad, which is the Hadith. There's a saying, it says, he who puts their foot on the path to seeking knowledge go in the way of God until they return. I repeat, I don't use he, I use they, because men and women, we must learn together. We are together in this endeavor. Men and women, not her behind me or in front of me, but beside me, we learn together. So they who put their foot on the path to seeking knowledge, they go in the way of God until they return. What it means is that knowledge is infinite. Nobody knows it all. I don't, you don't, your mama don't. Nobody, the so-called experts, nobody knows it all but God. And once you put your foot on that path to seeking knowledge, God motivates you, inspires you, guides you, assists you in all of your learning endeavors. And that's what Carter G. Woodson did. He put his foot on that path to seeking knowledge. He was an avid reader, a very strong-willed brother. And once he put his foot on that path to seeking knowledge by going to Douglas High School in Hampton, Virginia, Brer College, University of Chicago, Harvard University, he put his foot on that path to seeking knowledge. And one thing that he saw or didn't see was the history and accomplishments of African people. And that's why he was dedicated and committed to helping to restore our information to us. He is truly a champion. You know, and I know that he could have done so much more personally, with a doctorate degree from Harvard University. I mean, I love the fact that he challenged himself just like Du Bois did. You know, Du Bois is considered one of the great intellectual giants of the last century, along with Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop. Those two men truly were. But Carter G. Woodson understood that the foundation must be education and knowledge of self. And that's what he was about. Making sure that you know who you are. Making sure that you understand that you come from, your history does not begin with your captivity. You have a history long before captivity. In fact, your history begins with the knowledge of humanity. You influenced the world. At one particular time in the history of the world, people would come far and wide to sit at your feet to learn the disciplines of knowledge. I just don't say that in the libation portion just to be saying something. It's true. It is a fact. It's not fairy tale. It's not allegory. It's not myth. It is a fact. And Carter G. Woodson understood how important that was to making sure that our people got that information. In 1926, he started Negro History Week. I know, as the Great Grill, and I love that, sister. You should go online and check the Great Grill out. Just go to YouTube, put in the Great Grill, and many of her narratives and videos, outstanding. But he understood clearly why it was important. So he started Negro History Week. Now, I don't use Abraham Lincoln, who was forced into glory, as Lerone Bennett said in his book that came out about, what, 10 years ago or so, that he was forced into glory. Because, I mean, you know, when I've said that quote that he said, if I could solidify the Union without freeing them, I would do so. And maybe people would say, well, you're taking that out of context. Well, hell, he said it. Because the reality is the Caucasians in this country did not give a damn about us being enslaved. And do you think that all them Caucasians that fought against each other, that they were fighting for us? Well, hell, if they were fighting for us and they won, why were we treated so damn bad everywhere and still today? It was an economic issue. They didn't fight to in our captivity. Stop it. So Carter G. Woodson, after he started Negro History Week to honor Frederick Douglass. Well, Frederick Douglass, who was born in captivity, whose father was Caucasian, who was the so-called captor, was beating him, and he took the whip from him and started beating on him. He says he was just tired of getting beat. Well, he knew he had to leave Maryland because they were going to kill him. He had it up, went straight north, went all the way into Massachusetts. And he was assisted by those in the abolitionist movement. He was taught further to read, became a great orator. In fact, his What Does Your 4th of July Mean to Me was just an outstanding piece. Outstanding. So to honor Frederick Douglass, because Frederick Douglass didn't know when his birthday was, but his mother said, "You are my heart. You are my Valentine." So Frederick Douglass chose February 14th to be his birthday. And to honor Frederick Douglass, Carter G. Woodson started Negro History Week in the middle of February. Negro History Week. Some may argue, why do we have to have Black history? And in 1976, in fact, the first to celebrate it for a month was Kent State University, the Black Student Union in Kent State University in Ohio in 1970. But in 1976, it was evolved into a month. African and American African History Month. But why do we have to have it? Many Caucasians are saying, why you got to have that? Why you got to have BET? You know, Morgan Freeman, oh, I don't want no Black History Month. It should be. I mean, the reality is we have to have it. When you are lied on, when information is distorted and inaccurate, when it's dismissed or when you're displaced, when in the history, in actuality, it is you as an African person, but then when it's rewritten, it's some Caucasian or somebody else. Consistently done. So, yes, we have to have this, and I agree, because if you know me, our history is 24/7, 365, for real. But in February, it is a focus that it needs to be a focus. And it is encouraged to be continued 24/7, 365. But it needs to be a focus. And so my contention is let's focus on our history and how important it is. Let's focus on it. Yes. As you see, I'm very passionate about our history. I'm very passionate about a man of the stature of Carter G. Woodson. I always say that he, you know, was a teacher. And I love that fact. And in fact, when he passed, he was a principal with a doctorate degree from Harvard University. He was a principal in a high school in Washington, D.C. I know. But that's how committed he was. He never married. He never had children. In fact, there was one sister, she wrote, that she tried to, you know, she see him, she tried to try to get him to date her, and he says, no, I'm married to my work, you know. I'm married to my work. I'm committed to this work. And truly he was. Some of his great quotes, and believe me, I love Carter G. Woodson. I love his quotes. If you control a man's thinking, you don't have to worry about his action. When you determine what a man shall think, you don't have to be concerned yourself about what he will do. If you make a man feel that he is inferior, you don't have to compel him to accept an inferior status, for he will seek it himself. If you make a man think that he is justly an outcast, and you do not have to order him to go to the back door, he will go without being told. And if there is no back door, his very nature will demand one. That's from The Miseducation of the Negro, 1933. In 1933, he wrote that. And it's still germane or prevalent to this very day. If you control a man's thinking, you don't have to worry about his action or what he will do. That's why this program is dedicated and committed to what? To help freeing the African mind, to help us understand what we think, how we think. And of course, based upon what we think and how we think, we act or inact, depending upon the situation. When you determine what a man shall think, you do not have to be concerned yourself with what they will do. You know what they will do. Because you have been training them. You have been impacting them, imposing upon them. If you make a man feel that he is inferior, you don't have to be compelled to for him to accept an inferior status, for he will seek it himself. Brother Ralph just mentioned about the Caucasian, you know, with the idea that he was superior, and of course giving us an attitude of inferior. And many of us still feel that way today because we seek acceptance. We want to be with Caucasians. We want to live near Caucasians. We want to go to their schools. We want their jobs. We want to be promoted in their jobs. We don't want to do anything for ourselves because we are incapable. We can't come together. We should be so thankful. If you make a man think that he is justly an outcast, you don't have to order him to the back door. He will go without being told. And if there is no back door, his very nature will demand one. That is a serious conditioning process that Carter G. Woodson was very well aware. History shows that it does not matter who is in power or what revolutionary forces take over the government. Those who have not learned to do for themselves and have been dependent solely on others never will obtain any more rights or privileges in the end that they had in the beginning. We have, because of the conditioning still to this day, brothers and sisters, rely on what Caucasians will do for us as opposed to doing for ourselves. It is sad to think that still in this country and literally globally, that the vast majority of our people, of African people, wherever the African people are, still believe that Caucasians are superior. We should emphasize not Negro history, but the Negro in history. What we need is not a history of selected races or nations, but the history of the world, void of national bias, race hate, and religious prejudice. There should be no indulgence in undue eulogy of the Negro. The caste of the Negro is well taken care of when it is shown how he has far influenced the development of civilization. If we can make you, that's why that saying by Henry Barry in the Virginia House of Representatives at the end of the 18th century into the 19th century, the early 1800s. He says, we have closed off every avenue by which light may enter the captive's mind. And if we can extinguish the capacity to see the light, he will be as the beast of the fields and we will be safe. He said, we have closed off every avenue by which information, knowledge of self, we have prevented you from reading. We have distorted the information that you're going to read. We have just given you what we want you to have. Now, if we can make you not want to know who you are, and if we can make you reject those who bring you knowledge, we got you. We got your mind. You will be as the beast of the fields, and we will be safe. If we can make you not want to know, and here myself and many, many, many others who are just committed to helping our people understand who we are and trying to help our people purge this ignorance from our minds and to infuse in us a great, healthy knowledge of who we are, not ego, not tripping, but a confidence and a knowledge of ourselves that whatever it is that we want to do, we can do. The mere imparting of information is not education. Above all things, the effort must result in making a man think and do for himself. That's what it should be about. If the Negro in the ghetto must eternally be fed by the hand that pushes him into the ghetto, he will never become strong enough to get out of the ghetto. When I read that, I thought about our still condition of government handouts. And I understand, let me just say this. I understand the necessity for some of our people to receive that just to survive, and rightfully so. It is necessary, but what's even more necessary is acquiring the knowledge of ourselves. And, you know, let me say this right quick, because I'm seeing some pictures of Carter G. Woodson, and I've seen, I don't know, 5, 7 pictures of Carter G. Woodson from a young man to an older man. And if you can think about a picture of Carter G. Woodson or a number of pictures of Carter G. Woodson, he never smiled. He never smiled on none of these pictures. I often thought, I said, well, you know, maybe, you know, he didn't have a nice smile. Maybe he had whack teeth or something like that, you know. But then I realized and understood that what has happened to us and what is continuing to happen to us is nothing to smile about. This ain't funny. He understood clearly what is being done to us is a situation that we're put into a situation without knowledge of self to make us feel that we're less than, we're worthless. If a race has no history, if it has no worthwhile tradition, it becomes a negligible factor in the thought of the world and it stands in danger of being exterminated. I had an appointment book for many years that I would use when I was going to schools on my off days on the fire department in Milwaukee. And that was one of the quotes that I had in my book every year. If a race has no history, if it has no worthwhile tradition, it becomes a negligible factor in the thought of the world and it stands in danger of being exterminated because it doesn't stand on anything. It has no knowledge of self. It hasn't done anything. And clearly that is not us. We have a wonderful history behind us. If we're unable to demonstrate to the world that you have this record, the world will say to you, you are not worthy of to enjoy the blessings of democracy or anything else. And because this history of ours has been distorted, supplanted, erased, sometimes eliminated, the world thinks that we have done nothing. They have painted achievements. They have, even to this day, as much information there that it is that the ancient Kemetic society or ancient Egypt was African. And that was settled at the symposium by Dr. Sheikh Anjit Jop and Dr. Thelophilia Obenga in 1975 in Cairo. It was settled. The debate was settled. But because the European suffers from cognitive dissonance, that they believe that they are superior and nothing that you can present to them, nothing will correct that. They'll dismiss it, ignore it, kick it to the curb. Because even today, when you still watch A&E, National Geographic, Learning Channel, PBS, or whatever, if they show something on ancient Egypt, a dramatization or illustration, it's going to look Caucasian. But if they show somebody serving somebody, exactly, they're going to look African. They're going to look dark. Because what they consistently want to do is always to put into your mind that you ain't never been nothing but a servant. For me, education means to inspire people to live more abundantly, to learn to begin with life as they find it and make it better. That's what education should be about. Dr. John Henry Clark said education should be about handling of power, learning how to run society. I'm advocating that we develop education for the next We develop education for us to run society, for us to do everything that it takes to run our world, whatever it is, internally, externally, infrastructure, whatever it is, management. Once again, when you control a man's thinking, you don't have to worry about his actions. You don't have to tell him to stand here or go yonder. He will find his proper place and stay in it. You do not need to send him to the back door. He will go without being told. In fact, if there is no back door, he will cut one for his special benefit. His education, his miseducation makes it necessary. His miseducation. When you control a man's thinking, you don't have to worry about what they'll do. Because you've trained them. You don't have to tell them to stand here or go yonder. He will find his proper place. Just like Trump, make America. America has never and will never be great. Nothing that Europeans have done in terms of theft, murder, genocide will ever be considered great. Great Britain. And the British are the main ones. Excuse me. I can't stand the British. It just sickens me every time I see the so-called royals, the Queen, and all this marriage stuff. And of course, now that her mama is American African, so now there's a whole different dynamic there. Man. Tell you it's deep, ain't it? We're about to come up on a break. We'll continue with some of these quotes and some more about our history. This is, of course, our History Month. And so we'll be talking during the month. I'll be presenting individuals who have done great things in our history that maybe you don't know about and should know about. Because I think it's important that we learn about ourselves. Because when you infuse yourself with the knowledge of who you are, you stand tall and you stand strong. Nobody can ride your back if you're standing straight up. And this knowledge of self makes us erect, keeps us standing tall. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradio.com. We're going to be back in a minute. You stay right here with us on this African and American history.
Keep on giving to the child. Give it all you got. Spread.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. And tomorrow, well, let me get the rundown again just in case. On Monday evening, Let's Buy Black 365. Let's Buy Black 365. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, 8 p.m. Oh, on Mondays, I think that's 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Revive is on Wednesdays, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Ulu, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, or like we like to say, family-centered economics. And that is every Thursday at 9 p.m. Time for an Awakening this evening, Friday. This evening, 8 p.m., with hosts Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening. Tomorrow, SST. That's right, SST is Sports Talk, hosted by Brother Troy Wilmore. And that is from 10 to 12. And then tomorrow afternoon, early afternoon, it's from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. And then on Sunday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., it is Revive with Sister POC, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Richard and Brother Elliot. I see we have a caller here. Let me take this call. Good afternoon, caller 646. Good afternoon.
Brother Oshi, I see you are playing my song, brother. I had to give you a call once I heard you put forward that type of African vibe, you know what I mean, to have us moving forward bound, getting the hell out of this Yoruba nightmare.
That's right, my brother.
Oh, it always makes one feel good.
You know that's right, Jay. I appreciate you, brother. You know I do. Thank you.
Hey, listen, man. You know, we have a great history. And the sad thing is that a lot of us don't know the great history that we have because of our love for the Yoruba.
True.
We feel that our history doesn't compare with the Yoruba. And the sad thing is that every time we try to embrace the culture of the Yoruba, it leads to nothing but complete madness. You understand what I'm saying? It takes us to a place to where as we devour our culture for that savage's culture. Prime example is sororities and fraternities.
That's a good one. That's a very good one.
Now, here it is. You educated the freak Greeks. And you now want to embrace something that is his culture and don't even turn it around and turn it back into African culture.
Right.
But you represent that nonsense. That's a sickness.
Yeah.
That's a complete sickness. Now, every time you try to tell them Negroes that you represent in someone else's culture, they want to give you some BS. And to me, anybody that's involved in that nonsense, I don't trust them at all, bro. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the crazy thing is that with so much loyalty that they have to their fraternity and sorority brothers and sisters, you would think them Negro peens would be in a better position. They would have a stronger hold in the Yoruba system. Think about it. Because most of them are educated. Most of them get involved in that madness through what? College? You see what I'm saying?
Sure, sure.
So you're dealing with the individuals in our so-called race that are supposed to be the talented 10th.
Right. The big, the best and the brightest, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah.
But them some of the dumbest Negroes in the world.
Well, they're gatekeepers.
Because how could you rep somebody else's culture and bypass your culture?
Right.
For a freak Greek. Someone that sit at your feet and you educated. See, that's how the Yoruba works.
Yeah.
He gets you to deal in everything other than what's your own. He gets you to put forward others' agendas instead of your own agenda. That's why we can't get ahead on the level that we should, because our talent is being brain drained by freaks and degenerate culture.
Yeah. It's alien.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So how are we going to reclaim them? Because the thing is, if you are in a fraternity and a sorority, and you put in forward African principles, that's a whole different story. But here it is, there's even been brothers and sisters who have tried to put forward fraternities and sororities from an African perspective and been rejected.
Yeah, yeah.
But Negroes want to be alpha, delitas, and all of that, that madness. But them Negroes can't even come together to do what they need to do as a so-called fraternity and a sorority to place themselves in a better position in the Ruruku society. They have all of the skill set
right
to do anything.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If their minds were right,
that's right,
and they had an African perspective, shoot, we could identify African country and within 10 years build it up.
Yeah.
The greatness.
Yeah.
Because we have all of the skills and all of the talent to do it.
That's right. We have all that we need. Everything that we need to make that happen, we already have. We don't have to ask
already.
Nobody. We don't have to ask nobody for nothing. Nobody's help, permission, or nothing. We just need to get our right mind to do it. It's
and the
mind.
Is, all you would have to do is go to an African country and say to an African country, I have the labor force, like the damn Chinese are doing,
yeah,
to come in and build up your country. And this is what we ask in return.
But see, but Jay, unlike the Chinese, I envision it like we're coming so we all can work together to build this country
right
up. We're not, see, the Chinese, they only bring these people. There are no indigenous people working on projects in Africa that the Chinese have been agreed to do, because their whole thing is resources. China has no resources. Africa has
right
resources.
But what happens is the African leaders have to change that paradigm.
That's
I
right
mean, think about it.
That's right.
If we look at the last couple of great African leaders, you would have to put someone like Gaddafi at the head of it, in a sense, because he was a nationalist. Now, even though Gaddafi may have done some things that we could question and we could say was not up to African behavior, but the thing is, he had an agenda for his people.
Right.
His people had the highest standard of living on the continent. These bastards went in there
and destroyed
and
it.
And absolutely destroyed it. And
destroyed
now
got
our people being enslaved.
Yes.
Why? Why? Because he gave up his ability
to defend,
himself.
That's right. He gave up the ability. He was coaxed by the West, particularly United States and Britain, to do that. That's why the North Koreans said, oh,
no.
I saw what Libya did and what happened to Omar Gaddafi. I saw what Iraq did and what happened to Saddam Hussein. Kim Jong-un said, oh, hell no.
I'm not having it. And I don't blame him.
Me
but
either.
The Negro doesn't understand that. It's just like you have these Negroes here who are constantly trying to put us in the position to serve the daddy. With this whole voting nonsense. Voting does not help African people unless you have control of your community.
Exactly.
We don't have control of our community. All voting is doing is putting the Yoruba in a position to oppress you.
That's right.
You're giving him the right to oppress you. And we don't understand it.
No, we don't.
Because we think that this vote is going to do something for us. Here it is. People don't want to admit to it, and they don't want to be honest about it. So-called love is a politics. The Democratic Party will never, ever win again because they don't support their base, which is this Negro team. They too busy out there chasing their Yoruba brother and sister, especially their brother, to come back into the fold.
Yeah.
Fighting against their so-called best interest at the hand of another Yoruba. So why are we trying to protect two Yorubas fighting amongst themselves? It don't make sense to me.
No, it doesn't, brother. It doesn't make sense at all.
You know, so, you know, Oshie, I don't know what we're going to do to wake these Negro peens up, to get them to understand that this Yoruba is no friend of ours, that he's our enemy, and that all he's trying to do is protect his position on the planet. But the thing is, everybody else is also trying to protect their position on the planet other than us because of the simple fact we're trying to get into the Yoruba house and have the Yoruba love us. The Yoruba will never love us.
Never. Never.
He will never love us. How can you love something that you enslaved? You don't have no respect for that which you enslaved.
Right.
Because you see them as nothing but weak.
Yep, and inferior.
If I enslave you and I brutalize you, do you think there's ever going to be a time that I don't think that you are weak?
Exactly.
Maybe I may not constantly abuse you like I first abused you, but I will continuously abuse you. It's like the incessant relationship of Negroes that are in jail who have been raped. And then they learn to accept the rape or the rapist as their captor. And what do the captor do once he has you captured? He lays off you a little bit, but he's still committing the act against you.
Exactly. And then,
but you accept it.
Right, because you succumb to the Stockholm syndrome.
You
identify with them for your own protection and survival.
Yes.
And survival.
Yes, instead of dying.
Exactly.
Instead of trying to do whatever you
can
to kill that bastard.
Right.
Or to make it so where he can no longer harm you. And that is what the Negro is in this country.
Right. You go along to get along.
Get along. It's just like, I don't know if you saw that Dog and Pony show.
Angela
Wednesday
Rye.
Night, like I had said.
Yeah, Angela Rye.
Yeah.
Yo, BET. Yeah, I saw it. You know I did, Jay.
Okay. Now look at this, Oshie. Think about this. All of those Negroes there, in your perspective, is doing what?
All of those brothers and sisters who are on those panels are trying to run for public office and affect public policy and to try to safeguard and to try to be a part of a system that is clearly, through its history, has shown that all will ever be is marginalized. All will ever be is on a fringe. But yet, you know, that was their whole thing about, in fact, they were talking about empowerment and all this other kind of stuff. And I said, y'all don't understand what real power is. Because, no, voting is not power. Being in politics is not power. Money is not power. None of those things. Power is the ability to define reality. The Caucasian, the European, the Yoruba, he defined the reality.
and he imposed that reality on others. He made people accept that reality as if it's their own. Because if you didn't, he would kill you. And because we have accepted their reality as if it's our own, we operate in that fashion. In fact, it is dictated, and they know what we're going to do because we have accepted their reality as if it's our own. So we have no power.
There you go, brother. Those that define the argument controls the narrative.
That's right.
And them Negroes there are some of the most dangerous Negroes in the world. And you notice, they never have anyone who comes on the program with the slightest Pan-African or nationalist thought or idea at all.
No.
But they look up to that Negress Angela Rye. Oh man, I got great issues with her. Because she's dangerous, because she plays to the psychosis of Negroes looking for a hero, an entertainment, by shaking her head and rolling her eyes and making faces and giving quick quotes and quick statements and quick replies, all of the things that the Negro likes. Because of his incessant need to be entertained and put into escapism.
Well, you know,
it's just like the best thing I heard this week, Brother Oshie, and I had to really, really think about it. I saw something on Facebook where the brother was saying, do you notice that every time they have a black superhero that it's the Urugu who's always directing what they do? You notice that? Now,
yeah.
The new big crave that the Negroes are going to go see is the Black Panther.
Right.
And, you know, there's a white man that's the overseer of the Black Panther. That's in everything. There's always got to be the white man that's the smarter of the two and controls the situation. It's brother, I mean, we as a people, man, have to get off the tit of the Urugu. It's just that plain
system.
We got to really remove ourselves from the tit of the Urugu.
Quit trying to suck on that titty,
if we don't, We're just gonna keep on getting poisoned because, man, you know, this Urugu got us on remote control. It's like we were remote control.
Yeah.
You know, and the sad thing is, it's no reason for it because we have the information and the knowledge to rid ourselves of this Urugu, man.
That's right.
It ain't that hard, man. All we have to do is listen to the teachings that have been left here for us and to move ourselves in the direction that we no longer want to be governed by the Urugu and that we finally realize and see him for what he is, perpetual enemy.
That's right.
And the sad thing is, the person that brought that to my acquaintance, Hockey Mother Booty, don't even believe it no more.
I know, man. I know.
That's the saddest thing in the world, OG.
Yeah.
Because that one statement, let me tell you something. That was the statement that changed my life. When I read that in From Plants to Planets, his book, and I was able to process it and understand it, it absolutely changed my life. I knew at that point in time, even though I couldn't totally identify it, I knew what he was.
Right.
And the sad thing is, most of us do not know who he was, nor do we see him for what he is.
Right.
And he is our perpetual enemy. And it seems like more and more of us are just looking for ways to incorporate ourselves not only into his life by marrying them, but also into their society by acting and behaving like him when given the chance to do what he do to their brothers and sisters. Yeah. So on that note, Brother OC, as always, I just enjoy your show, brother.
Brother, no, I...
You know what I mean? You got me to the point to where I'm changing certain things in my schedule on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, brother, so I can have the opportunity to listen to you, brother.
Well, I appreciate that, Jay.
And gain knowledge from
you. I appreciate that, but also I appreciate you calling in and sharing your knowledge with our listeners and myself. I've learned a lot from you and look forward to maybe one day even meeting you, man. I appreciate you, brother.
Believe me, I do. Hopefully we will, but all I would like to say is let's always promote and move forward that the Yorugu is our perpetual enemy.
Yes.
That he will be till the day we die.
That's right.
To the day that our children die. The world is over.
Yeah.
He will always be the enemy and will probably be the world, the person and the thing that destroys the planet.
That's right.
Because of his
absolute
sickness.
Sickness,
the beast,
man,
and the dog that he is. It's nothing like him.
No,
nothing,
it really isn't.
It's nothing like the Yorugu.
No.
You can't, you know, and the thing is, when you try to tell people that there's no place in the world where people of color have been living amongst themselves
peacefully
and in harmony and peace,
yes,
that the Yorugu has came into their existence,
yep,
and not totally destroyed it.
Yep.
There's no place in this world. And once you understand that, you should understand what the Yorugu is. And you couldn't get a white man or a Negro, even the Negro peen, to identify one place on this planet since people of color and the Yorugu have met to where that basket hasn't caused total destruction annihilation of not only the people, but of the land. Hotep, brother, and have a good day.
Thank you, Brother Jay. Hotep, you have a great weekend, my brother. Peace to you. Yeah, he is our enemy. And what Carter G. Woodson was trying to tell us and explain to us is that we have to do these things for ourselves. He said, Carter G. Woodson said, the real servant of the people must live among them, think with them, feel for them, and if nothing else, and die for them. I consider myself a person who loves our people. I love Africa and I love Africans. And I'll feel this way to the day that I die. I don't like what we have done to ourselves, but I understand why that has happened and who is responsible for making it happen. Our responsibility is to get out of it, is to purge ourselves of the ignorance that has been placed upon us, or to be able to step up. See, when Jay was talking, I was thinking about how the Caucasian, the European, the Yorugu, the cracker, imposes their culture on people just to, to browbeat you with it and to make what you have irrelevant, to make what you have inferior. Whatever your customs, traditions, or whatever, it is negligible because they are imposing theirs to your detriment. If you teach the Negro that he has accomplished as much good as any other race, he will aspire to equality and justice without regard to so-called race. Such an effort would upset the program of the oppressor in Africa and in America. Play up before the Negro then his crimes and shortcomings. Let him learn to admire the Hebrew, the Greek, the Latin, and Teuton. Lead the Negro to detest the man of African blood, to hate himself. That's what they've done. They made us hate ourselves. They made us feel ashamed of our hair, the color of our skin, the wide and length of our nose. They made us feel bad about who and what we are, our customs, our traditions. They made us hate ourselves.
but the responsibility to purge ourselves of it is ours. It is not theirs. They're the perpetrators. They want to make sure that it continues. The thought of the inferiority of the Negro is drilled into him almost every class he enters and almost every book he studies. If the European is presenting it, be leery of it. In fact, don't even deal with it. The same educational process which inspires and stimulates the oppressor with the thought that he is everything and has accomplished everything worthwhile depresses and crushes at the same time the spark of genius in the Negro by making him feel that his race does not amount to much and will never measure up to the standards of other people. And yet we still send our children to these damn schools so they could be miseducated. The oppressor has always indoctrinated the weak with his interpretations of the crimes of the strong. The so-called modern education, with all its defects, however, does others so much more good than it does the Negro because it has been worked out in conformity to the needs of those who have enslaved and oppressed weaker people. This education does the Asians much better than us. Everybody better than us because it is by design to function in that way. It may be well to repeat here the sayings that old men talk what they have done, young men of what they are doing, and fools of what they expect to do. We has a rather large share of that last mentioned class. Yeah, this is true of what we expect to do. The sayings and quotes of Dr. Carter G. Woodson, the father of African and African-American history. We'll be talking about other men and women in our history. When I was doing history programs back in Milwaukee during this month, I was trying to help us understand that our history goes back to the beginning of time. That our history is world history, but it has been omitted because the Caucasian wanted us to believe that we ain't never been nothing. In fact, the Caucasian wanted us to believe, and there are some of us who believe to this day that our enslavement was good for us because our enslavement exposed us to Western ideology, Western thought, and Western religion, Christianity. It was good for us, and nothing could be furthest from the truth. The enslavement of African people was the worst thing that has happened to humanity, to human beings. Caucasians wouldn't agree with that because they have benefited tremendously. Europe is rich. Europe was land poor, resource poor, and people poor until they had their renaissance, their awakening, when they went around the world claiming everybody's stuff in the name of Spain, Portugal, France, England, Germany, Belgium, you name it. The conference of 1884-85 in Berlin, Germany, the Berlin Conference, when they carved up Africa like a piece of cake, taking every portion of it with the exception of Ethiopia. And, of course, Ethiopia had a battle against Italy, and we won. Ethiopia is the only place that has not been colonized by the European. Let's take history black. This is the article that appeared in this month's Arrow, the Institute of the African World, Baba Phil Johnson, our ancestor, and we'll talk more about him as the days go on. I'll be reading from. There's a good article in here called Let's Take History Black by Pafia Kujichagulia's sister. Although the father of black history, Dr. Carter G. Woodson, established Black History Month during the 1920s,
Almost a century later, the general population remains blissfully unaware of African and or African history. This epic journey of human evolution began when the first common ancestor, Australopithecus africanus, Lucy, stepped onto the world scene in approximately 3.5 million years before the Christian era. Every evolutionary stage from Australopithecus, 10 million BCE, through modern human beings, Homo sapiens sapien, 150,000 years, occurred in Africa. History is the history of the African history is the history of the human, of humanity. African history is the history of humanity. Considerable archaeological findings reveal the African identity of many Aboriginal populations. Scientific research reveals that Africans populated present-day Asia by 900,000 years before the Christian era, and present-day Europe around 40,000 years before the Christian era. African Aborigines further migrated to present-day Australia around 32,000 years before Christian era, BCE. So when I say BCE, before the Christian era, of course, comes over the year, the supposed birth of Christ, which is now, what, 2,000-something years ago. Eventually, a transcontinental migration over the Bering Strait placed Africans in the Western Hemisphere more than 27,000 years before Columbus terrorized, before Columbus terrorized the Caribbean islands. Thanks to radiocarbon dating, which of course was developed by our great scholar, Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop, radiocarbon dating, which can prove how old something is. Thanks to radiocarbon dating for fossils up to 70,000 years old and the potassium-argon technique for fossils more than 70,000 years old, both invented by West African physician, anthropologist, historian, and multi-genius, Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop, it is possible to date and identify African origins of both human evolution and civilization. From the mouth of Africa's Great Rift Valley, African populated the planet, eventually giving birth to the world's first and greatest high cultures. Africans created Kemet, or what the Greeks called Egypt. Africans then migrated out of continental Africa, giving birth to the civilizations of Sumer in Mesopotamia, which is now present-day Iraq, 3,500 to 500 years before Christian era. 500 years. So that's really 30,000 years before the Christian era, the Indus Valley in India, 3,000 to 15,000, China's Qing Dynasty, as well as the ancient African Olmec societies constructed by in the present-day Mexico and Guatemala. Those Olmec heads, look them up. The Olmec civilization, O-L-M-E-C. Google it. Look at those heads. Look how they look. They were found in Cancun, Mexico. The Olmec civilization is the earliest civilization in this whole hemisphere. These African-centered high cultures, the first known to humankind, humankind, thrived thousands of years before Rome came into existence. Rome didn't come into existence until 500 years before the birth of Christ, or 500 years before Christian era, let me put it that way. 11,000 years of unparalleled excellence and African genius predate Europe colonization of the Western Hemisphere and the tricontinental enslavement of African people, or the Maafa, or the Infakani, or the Holocaust of our enslavement by 11,000 years of existence. In spite of global miseducation, this information has been researched, documented, and made available through the painstaking scholarship of many distinguished unsung heroines and historians. Some of these scholars and their research can be found in books, Blacks in Science, edited by Dr. Ivan Van Sertima. Great African Thinkers, Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop, also edited by Ivan Van Sertima, and contributing editor Larry Obadeli Williams. And The Civilization of Barbarism, an Authentic Anthology by Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop. Just to name a few, these books reveal that Africans have been creating civilizations and developing the science for millenniums. However, African historians remain a mystery because these facts go untaught as students matriculate through America's miseducation system. One can actually achieve a doctorate's degree in history without learning that African origins of civilization. You can get a doctorate degree and not know a damn thing. And some of these Negroes have doctorate degrees and don't have a damn clue about the achievements of African people because they've been whitewashed. They've been Europeanized. They suffer from, they've been inflicted with the Urugu virus, whiteitis. Although evidence, information, artifacts, monuments, and cultural connections continue to exist on every continent, racism cannot propagate the origins of genius of African civilization because these African facts negate Caucasian's myth of supremacy. More than 5,000 years ago, Africa gave the world its first physicians, masons, architects, engineers, including Imhotep, the great architect of the Step Pyramid and advisor to the pharaoh Zoser of the Third Dynasty. There were 30 dynasties in ancient Kemet. This is the Third Dynasty. Architects of Africa's great pyramids, 2,000, which when I say 2,680, that was, now you add 2,000 years to that, that makes that almost 5,000 years. 2,000 years before the village of Rome appeared on the world scene, the African multi-genius Imhotep was deified. He was deified in Kemet in the Mediterranean base as a god of medicine. One of the world's first multi-geniuses. He's the architect that created the Step Pyramid for the Pharaoh. He was a vizier, or would be like a prime minister for the Pharaoh Zoser. He was the world's first god of medicine, and as well as the first Christ. Christ means the anointed one. That's what Christ means, the anointed one. The Greeks worship Imhotep. In fact, the oath that doctors take is called the Hippocratic Oath, because for the Greeks to be, see, the plagiarization of Greek, of the Greeks, is just too deep. That's why for Caucasians, everything begins with the Greeks. Well, for the Greeks, it was their learning at the feet of African people in Kemet that they began to cross names out and put their names on it. Hippocrates, Socrates, Plato, all of them, a bunch of plagiarizers, a bunch of thieves, a bunch of liars. So the Hippocratic Oath that doctors take to do no harm, contained in the oath is the name Asclepius, and Asclepius is Imhotep. The Greeks worship Imhotep, their god of healing. Imhotep is also deified by Hippocrates in the Hippocratic Oath as the god Asclepius. To this day, all physicians must pledge allegiance to this illustrious African scientist and multi-genius, Imhotep. How many of those people know that? I ain't talking about the crackers. I ain't talking about how many of our people who are doctors who have taken this oath know that. And the Organization for African Unity in San Antonio, Texas, is going to be hosting the sister next month. So, March 10th of 2018, it will be hosting. It should be doing a lecture. in San Antonio. Priva Kujitagalia, self-determination. Right on. I hope you, we have some minutes left. Give us a call, 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. As we wind this program down, in terms of our history, and that's what we'll be doing pretty much all of this month, talking about various people in our history. You know, as I'm reading that, I thought about many of the scholars and historians, as I often say, who without foundation money, grant money, went about reclaiming and recapturing, restoring the history of our people. Not just Carter G. Woodson, there was A.J. Rogers. A.J. Rogers, who did a lot of great work and a lot of good research of going around to museums. And so just the same is what our good brother and friend, Dr. Renoka Rashidi, is doing. In fact, I think now he's in Morocco. Can't wait to get back to the States so we can get him on this horn here and get that going. We said we're going to do it, and I want to do it, believe me. So, but not just J.E. Rogers. I mentioned that in 1926, Carter G. Woodson started Negro History Week in 1926. And he started it in February to honor Frederick Douglass, who did not know when his birthday was. His mother said, "You are my heart, you are my Valentine." So he chose February 14th to be his birthday. And so Carter G. Woodson started Negro History Week in 1926. So we can have at least that time to focus on our history. Yes, I said, and I know you see it, that we should study our history, know our history 24/7, 365. No problem. Believe me. Love it. But at least now, today, we can focus on it. All of us. Focus on our history. So in 1926, when he started Negro History Week, another sister named Drusilla Dungy Houston wrote a book called The Wonderful Ethiopians of the Ancient Kushite Empire. The Wonderful Ethiopians of the Ancient Kushite Empire in 1926. She has one of the best quotes ever that is very pointed for this month and for us as a people. She said, "I have dug up an irrefutable arsenal of facts that Yale or Harvard or even cowardly research and either in cowardly." Brother Oshie, come on, get this. You know, sometimes I was saying that I was about to do a flow and bam, something hit me. Let me get it back. She said, "I have dug up an irrefutable arsenal that not Yale or Harvard or even cowardly research and our people cannot refute." They cannot refute. Then she says, "How can a leadership point the way forward that is utterly ignorant of the past?" That is a dynamic quote. Very pointed for this month and for us, period. Period. How can a leadership point the way forward that is utterly ignorant of our history, that is utterly ignorant of world history, that is utterly ignorant of what has happened to us because of what Europeans done, and understand that history? Because we've been trained to believe we have no history. Every time I think of Dr. Clark, I love to listen to Dr. John Henry Clark. In fact, this is what you should do. You should go online. In fact, this whole month, you should just go to YouTube You should go to YouTube and let the ancestors speak to you. You can even hear Marcus Garvey. You heard Marcus Garvey in the Great Griot's piece on Dr. Carter G. Woodson and African History Month. How can a leadership point the way forward that is utterly ignorant of the past? Because we've been led to believe that we had never done nothing, that we were running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having created a civilization of any kind, of any consequence, and nothing could be furthest from the truth. But we've been trained to believe that, and we believe that today. So I'm saying to us, focus this month. Yes, I agree. This history should be taught and learned 24/7, 365, no doubt about it. But at least this month particularly, research. Go to YouTube. Google some names. Do whatever you have to do. Drusilla Dungy Houston, her book, The Wonderful Ethiopians of the Ancient Kushite Empire in 1926. I have dug up an irrefutable arsenal of facts that Yale or Harvard or even scholarly research and our people cannot dispute. They cannot dispute. It is there. It's undeniable. What I say on this program is not my opinion. I don't give my opinion because my opinion is profane. When I understand and learn about what has happened to us, damn it, I am angry. I am mad and I cuss. So I don't give you my opinion. I give you information and knowledge by our scholars, our researchers, our historians, our elders, our ancestors. Information that is liberating. Information that makes you understand that, no, you are not the subhuman creatures that these crackers wanted to make you out to be, having no knowledge of self. No, you are not that. In fact, once again, there was a period of time in the world, in the history of this planet, that people came to sit at our feet. When the Greeks, in George G.M. James' book, Stolen Legacy, everything that I say, you can go do the research. Look it up for yourself. I'm not going to throw something out here that is BS. Our people suffer for lack of knowledge. And when you hear it, when I say that or hear that, I think of Brother Elliot, Time for an Awakening. That's his opening. Our people suffer for lack of knowledge, and we do. And it's to our detriment. In fact, a lot of times we don't want to believe anything unless it comes from the Caucasian. We don't believe our own scholars and researchers. We're afraid that it's too black. Well, that's too black. That's too African. We need more diversity. We need more inclusion. We need more integration. See, it'd be one thing in terms of true integration where people come and whatever their cultures are, they share them. But see, what we've been trying to do is go into somebody else's situation. There's no sharing amongst Caucasians. They don't want to share any damn thing, the selfish, greedy son of a. They don't want to share. It is their way or no way. So that's what we're trying to integrate to. It ain't a sharing. Although they have appropriated all the stuff that's ours, hell. All the entertainment, the music, hairstyles, lips, ass, color. Caucasians risk skin cancer trying to be out there so because they're so damn pale, trying to get a little darker. A little browner. And see, what we're going to be saying this month is that reason why you must listen and learn and embrace is because you've been denied. You have been encouraged not to seek, not to do. Outstanding, Brother Ralph. Love you, man. The wonderful Ethiopians of the ancient Kushite Empire, Drusilla Dungy Houston. He put it right there. You can go get that. You can go get it right on. And to me, that quote is just outstanding. Our leadership lacks knowledge of self. Al Sharpton don't know. Jesse don't know. These politician Negroes don't know. The folks that were on that damn panel on BET, Angela Rye's State of the Union response, they don't know. Because if they truly knew, then there wouldn't be a serious desire and all-out effort to be a part of a system by its very design is to eliminate African people. By its very design. No, they don't know. That's why, to me, the most important thing that we can do at this very moment is declare that we are an African people. That Africans on the continent and throughout the diaspora, we are one. Now let's come together and build. And let's do for ourselves. Let's come together and share knowledge and information. Let's come together and develop the confidence in each other that whatever it takes, we will do, because we got all that we need. We got all that we need to make it happen. The only thing that we don't have, which is probably the deepest part, is our right minds. Our right minds. Stephen Biko said, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Because if you can control a man's thinking, if you can control their mind, you don't have to worry about what they'll do, what they'll say, how they'll behave, what their actions will be. When you determine what a man shall think, you don't have to be concerned yourself with what he will do. If you make him feel that he is inferior, you don't have to compel him to accept an inferior status, for he will seek it for himself. If you make a man think that he is justly an outcast, you don't have to order him to go to the back door. He will go without being told. And if there is no back door, his very nature will demand one. These crackers put a vice grip on our minds. And if you understand that too, there's a little knob at the end of the handle, the vice grip. Turn that damn knob, brothers and sisters. By you turning that knob, that means that you've acquired knowledge of self and confidence in who you are. And once you've turned that knob, you can release the tension off the vice grip. Brothers and sisters, have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Thank you, brothers and sisters. Peace.